Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor, episode 40. Today we ask, is carnitine good for your heart this week? Can you overcome sweet addiction? And are your tea bags dosing you with plastic chemicals? Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor, episode 40. I am Relentless Roger, here with Dr. Colin Chant, the Caveman Doctor. What's up, man?
Big day for us. Episode 40.
The big 4-0.
Who would have thunk it? I didn't think we were going to make it past 10.
Midlife crisis.
Yeah. Whew. Well, same old here, you know, every podcast I say I'm busy. But, you know, really, I'm excited. Summer's here. I started packing.
Summer's here already.
Summer's here. Oh, not so, sorry. Spring is here. Summer's definitely not here.
I was going to say, I did not get that memo.
It was late to arrive. Actually, it was 88 last Tuesday. That was semi-summer. Anyway, sure. Spring is here. It's sunny out. It gets sunny early in the morning. There's nothing better than waking up and having it actually be light out when you want to do some work. I mean, that is 6 to 8 is my best, there are my best 2 hours of the day in terms of getting work done. So, yeah, I'm just feeling great with that, feeling more energetic, more productive, less stressed out. My appetite's through the roof. I can't stop eating, but I'm putting on lean mass, so I don't know. It must be the weather. It has to be the weather.
I think so.
All aspects of life are just improved. So, anyway.
Weather always has a lot to do with that stuff.
Seriously. It makes me wonder, why don't I live somewhere that's always sunny and warm? Yeah. Something tells me it won't be as good anymore.
I don't know. I always debate that.
It's a tough one. What do you got going on?
Yeah, I could echo almost exactly what you had to say. I think the weather makes the world go round. The weather is perking up, and I think every week is just kind of getting better than the last, you know?
Absolutely.
Enough of winter already, and we seem like we've broken out of it. So onward and upward, big thing at Relentless Fitness, boot camps are now outdoors again. And that is always, it sort of always marks the time of year that we get excited about weather. So that is a big thing. Other than that, yeah, just cranking away.
Good. You're good. Yeah, it must be a great time of the year for you and your business.
Absolutely.
Better than working out outside.
March, April are pretty big months usually. A lot of people getting back in the flow. A lot of the, you know, we don't really suffer from the January drop off or the February drop off as much as, you know, big gyms do, because we don't do the straight up memberships. We do more the one-on-one personal training gig. Mm-hmm. And so people are a lot less susceptible to, you know, go with the ebbs and flows. But at the same time, you do see rushes at different points in the year, especially in classes and whatnot. And I would say March, April is definitely that time.
Great.
All right, man. So lead us off.
Let's do it.
Let's dig into some articles.
So last week we spoke about the red meat study, or the carnitine study, which it really should be called. I think we went into it a decent amount. You know, frankly, we could have talked about it for several hours. I posted a bunch of articles on Twitter. Chris Masterjohn article. I mean, he just goes into such thoroughly evaluates it, and he does a great job. And I posted a couple other tweets as well the article has merits and the article has issues. However, this week, a great article comes out. This is from April 12th. The title is L-Carnitine Retake Spotlight, Hints at Survival Benefit in Acute Myocardial Infarction and Meta-Analysis. Basically, so for the listener out there, a meta-analysis is basically when you take a bunch of studies, a bunch of randomized studies, and then you add all their data together and figure out what the overall benefit was. So, you know, 5 studies are positive and 4 are negative. You lump all that. And ideally, you have individual patient data. So basically, you're saying instead of 5 individual studies with, 100 people each, you have a 500-person study. So they looked at 13 controlled trials that were randomized looking at L-carnitine. Now, L-carnitine is what's found in high amounts in meat and fish and chicken and pork, several vegetables. And this is what the article last week showed, that in your GI tract, it is converted to TMAO.
Yeah.
And this causes, it puts you at an increased risk of having a cardiovascular death and cardiovascular issues. So these studies, now let's just stop for a minute. So these are studies where they're supplementing patients that are at risk for myocardial infarctions with this substance, with L-carnitine. Okay, so right away there's something a little off. There's 13 studies where they're giving this to patients to look at a survival benefit from avoiding an acute myocardial infarction. And last week we were told this causes cardiovascular death. So now they looked at the 13 studies in a meta-analysis to figure out what exactly is going on. They looked at all-cause mortality, angina symptoms, and ventricular arrhythmia. And basically, they found that given 6 months to a year, there is a possible role not only in acute management, but also in secondary prevention of myocardial infarctions and all-cause mortality. And they showed basically that there was a reduction in infarct size. So an infarct is basically when a coronary artery gets blocked and it doesn't provide oxygen to a part of the heart. That's an infarct, and then that heart muscle dies, and it's very hard to get it back. So basically, the smaller the infarct, the better you do. So this decreased the infarct size, and it supports the potential use of L-carnitine in acute myocardial infarction and possibly in secondary coronary prevention and treatment, including angina. So angina is chest pain, so it might decrease chest pain as well. So then the article says, you know, this might be very contradictory to the article last week criticizing L-carnitine in red meat and commercial energy drinks. And they go into that study. They talk about the gut microbes again. So this is a good thing. And then they interview the senior author from this study. And the guy says, you know, if carnitine is the problem, certainly high carnitine wouldn't be worse than low carnitine, because there's obviously high carnitine that they're giving these patients. And he says the previous study pointed at TMAO as a driver of atherosclerosis, but only a certain bacteria from form TMAO, and it was formed in meat eaters. So maybe it's the meat and not the L-carnitine within the meat that's promoting TMAO.
Oh,
which,
man.
Which is just, I mean, you can't just make ridiculous statements like that based on nothing. So then the gist of this is basically you can't eat it in red meat because it's terrible for you, so then take high-dose supplements. So once again, it's favoring supplementation over...
It's funny. When you start to pool all of these stories together, it looks really silly, right? It looks like everyone has you know, red meat kind of up on the cross, so to speak, and that they won't stop.
And then when there's direct contradictory data, it's like, oh, well, maybe it's... And then they just babble on some random nonsense, and it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, all-cause mortality was reduced by 22% in 11 of these trials.
Mm-hmm.
So the risk of dying from anything was reduced by 22%. This goes back to what you always bring up. You can point out, you know, cancer death, cardiovascular death,
right,
et cetera. But overall survival, all-cause mortality is... That's where the money is. So it decreases it by 22%. I'm not saying to go out and supplement with L-carnitine, but it's just, it's very interesting. And they have a nice little blurb at the end. They state that the authors state that the benefits are likely from the ability of L-carnitine to promote elimination of toxic, I don't know how toxic they are, but fatty acid metabolites. And they facilitate the transport of long-chain fatty acids into the mitochondria, improving glucose oxidation. So once again, carnitine upregulates the mitochondria.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, anything, pretty much anything that upregulates the mitochondria is usually providing us with some kind of bonus. And, you know, these are carbohydrate restriction, intense exercise, all these things that upregulate the mitochondria, and they show to increase survival. So
another thing we talk about a lot is how you can't look at any one thing in a vacuum. And I thought that, you know, everyone started to go down the road of L-carnitine. You know, and even in that study that we talked about last week, you know, I think a lot or all of the people who were eating meat were also taking a carnitine supplement.
Mm-hmm. They were,
which is really interesting.
Yeah, they failed to mention that.
Yeah, right. And then the last thing I want to say about that is you brought up his name earlier, but Chris Masterjohn, for my money, when I was going out We still have to put up actually our links from last week, but we said we would put up some of the rebuttals, and Chris Kresser wrote a good one. But for my money, Chris Masterjohn, I think, wrote the best one.
Yeah.
It's a little dense. It's a little hard to get through, but if you're out there and concerned and actually interested in this study, I really highly recommend trying to push through Masterjohn's full piece. Even if it's skimming and reading the sections that you get interested in, it's really incredible once someone starts to tear down the walls and really get into the data. Yeah. It's really incredible how some of these headlines are constructed. Because if you're going into the thing that stuck out to me were some of the charts that Chris Masterjohn displayed, which was the level basically of carnitine in, you know, meat versus some of these other things, and halibut was, you know, what the article really should have said was halibut may cause, you know, coronary artery disease, because it was multiples, like almost exponentially higher than the red meat in the study. But of course, you don't see that coming out.
Yeah, that's what's sketchy. That's the same group. And they showed in a past study that TMAO, the foods that increase that the most, and that's the issue here. It's not necessarily, it's not carnitine. It's when carnitine is digested by the bacteria and they turn it to TMAO.
Yeah.
So TMAO is the issue. The largest food, the food that gets converted to the largest amount of TMAO is fish.
I said levels of carnitine. What I meant to say was TMAO.
Yeah.
It was the charts that actually got to the root of what they were trying to say.
And so then he lists a couple. I mean, I posted a couple on Twitter. There's so many of these. I mean, how long have we been hearing shoved down our throat that eating fish decreases risk of heart attack, cardiovascular mortality, et cetera? So which is it? Because, you know, it's not making sense anymore.
Yep.
And it is deceiving how they present it in an isolated view, because they know very well that the levels of fish increase it the most. So why do they try to put the blame on red meat? Because they know that's going to give them the biggest bang for their buck with the article.
And it's just amazing to go down, you know, to break down the logic, right? I mean, the simple logic. Once you get through the words, it's like, okay, L-carnitine, right, converts to TMAO, which causes coronary artery disease, right?
Yep.
Okay, we have that line of logic. Great. Now tell us what converts to the largest amount of TMAO. Somehow the headline comes out red meat, right? You get into the data and red meat looks very ordinary when it comes to TMAO. It's not like it's the second highest or the third. It looks middle of the road. Like there are a couple things below it and there's a heck of a lot above it.
Yeah.
And I, for the life of me, after I finished reading Master John's Teardown, I mean, it just looked like a joke.
Yeah, saying it's bad, but fish may actually be worse.
Right.
Everyone would say, oh, it's crazy. Fish are amazing. Mediterranean diet. Live forever. Eat olives.
Right. And I think there's less of a problem with fish than there is this line of logic in the study.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Which is, again, you know, kind of in a vacuum, looking at one thing.
Yeah, they're going for the big press release, you know.
Yep.
Anyway, check it out. We'll put the link in here. Very interesting and extremely timely. I got to think they planned it, but there's no way. Meta-analysis take a while.
Yeah.
So kudos to them, even though I don't like his comment about the red meat. Anyway.
As we mentioned, we could talk for hours about this, and I guess we just chimed in for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, we went on a tangent there, but that's all right. They want to know. They want to know about.
Yeah. It's a joke is what it is.
It really is.
That's the kind of stuff that'll get me riled up.
Yeah.
Headlines, you know.
You don't want to see Roger riled up. Things get crazy.
Think them through. We say it all the time. You got to think these things through and don't get emotional when you see a headline come out.
Just wait for these people to start picking it apart.
Yeah.
All right. What do you got?
All right, man. This one is right up your alley. I saw it. I thought of you. And so from Atlantic Mobile, are tea bags turning us into plastic? So when you jumped off coffee, right, and you started drinking tea, do you drink the standard tea bags? You know those newer tea bags that are triangular shaped, the pyramid shape?
It's amazing.
You have some of those?
I had a cup when I was making tea and I was looking, thinking, what the heck is this tea bag actually made out of?
Right. So that's exactly what this author was wondering. Taylor Orsi. I hope I got that right. But anyway, we'll credit the article. So Taylor was wondering, she was drinking her tea and wondering the exact same thing. And lo and behold, turns out to be plastic. So even better, when you get a little bit more into this article, you learn that it's not all about boiling point, that there's actually a lower temperature where certain materials start to break down in the plastic. And that's called apparently the glass transition temperature. And that transition temperature is lower than the temperature of boiling water. So that is concerning. Now, the article is very inconclusive. You know, she kind of goes to a few experts here and there to ask them questions about what they think might be going on. This is not a study. There's nothing official coming out of this. It just raises the question. You know, it's these fancy-looking tea bags that are more expensive than a lot of the tea bags we're used to. They look great. They're very colorful. They're very vibrant. I have some. I'm kind of concerned now, but I love them. And it's just, hey, what's going on here? and they could be breaking down below the boiling point and releasing some stuff we don't exactly want in our tea.
As bad as plastic is, putting it in boiling water.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. It's not going to fly.
So this is troublesome because I actually just picked up some, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit later, just picked up some new tea that I'm pretty excited about, and at least half of it is these newfangled pyramid bags.
I don't know, man. I'm back on the coffee.
Yeah.
Coffee wagon, and it's amazing.
It's a good wagon to be on.
I don't know what to tell you, but I did, I usually don't have my computer here, but I did just Google Taylor, and it can be a guy or girl's name.
Yeah.
Jonathan Taylor Thomas. No, is that his last name? Jonathan Taylor Thomas?
That's
not the kid from Home Improvement?
Yeah, that's the last name.
Taylor Thomas.
Middle name. All right.
Anyway, that's the problem with these chemicals and these plastics. They get in anywhere. That's like that study we presented where they tried to eliminate them, and they had more in their urine, more BPAs and more...
Well, what does that say? Right? Does that say we shouldn't be worried about this as much? Or, I mean, it's tough. This is a rabbit hole you could go all the way down.
I think making a concerted effort to eliminate them makes sense because you know they're going to come in places where you least expect it.
Yeah.
Like maybe tea bags. But now that you know, you got to get rid of them.
See, this is tough. Get rid of them by drinking them?
Then you don't want to be wasteful.
Right, exactly.
And then you don't want to give them to someone else because then...
It's tough.
It's like when patients give me cookies or candy and stuff, I leave it for like the nurses and others. But then I feel bad because it's not good for them.
Yeah.
There's no easy
The answer. Dilemmas never end. Well, I can guarantee you I will at least finish my current stock of pyramid bags and go from there.
All right.
And hope that I don't kick the bucket before.
You should get a BPA test and check your urine for it.
I could do that.
We're interested.
All right.
Poor pack.
my BPA will go way down after finishing the supply.
Don't even do it, yeah. Yeah.
All right, what do you got?
All right, good stuff. So I have a little encounter I had today and then some other things I want to bring up after it. So I was talking to one of my coworkers who's been trying to cut carbs. So she's kind of on that borderline of insulin sensitivity. Maybe her blood sugar gets a little high at times, trying to lose some weight. So she said, you know, I've just been really having a hard time getting the last couple of things out. So she does a slice or two of bread a day. I think she's got that down. But she still says, like, you know, I just crave these sweets every once in a while. And then she went on to tell me how she has this baked good recipe where she doesn't use any sugar. She uses stevia, and then she crushes some nuts and puts them in and, like, coconut or something else. And she said, you know, I can still get that sweet taste without causing the rise in insulin and hopefully not shuttling some sugar into my cells. And then I said, you know, what if the issue here is not actually the carbohydrates per se? Because you're still eating a low amount. What if it's actually the sweet taste that is what causes you to crave more sweets and stimulates more desire to eat these sweets? And then she like kind of looked at me like, oh, well, I have to have my sweets. Like, well, maybe that's the problem. We need to eliminate you having to have your sweets. And I think, you know, we've spoken about this numerous times. And then interestingly, not a minute later, this was at the end of the day, I checked my email. My brother sent me a pretty cool study. And I think this correlates here and may not make sense at first, but they did a study where they took, I think it was men, but yeah, 49 men, and they gave them either beer or they gave them Gatorade, and then they did a PET scan. And a PET scan is a positron emission tomography, and we talk about this a lot. It's a scan where you give radioactive sugar and cells in the body that are actively turning over, metabolically active, like your heart, and your brain will light up because you're thinking a lot, your heart's beating. And if you have cancer, cancer will light up because cancer eats sugar. So they gave them Gatorade or they gave them beer, and then they looked to see which levels or which parts of the brain basically increased. They're looking at increased levels of dopamine. And that's the pleasure chemical. And that's kind of the gist of this. And they showed that there's basically significantly more dopamine activity following the taste of beer than the taste of Gatorade. Even though a lot of these people said Gatorade tasted better than beer. And the big thing in this study, they just gave them a small amount, like 15 mLs. So the point of this, they're saying it's independent of the alcohol because they're not getting inebriated. So, and they're trying to look at basically addictive behavior. So what causes the addictive behavior of beer per se? Why does it lead to people to abuse it? And they're saying here that it's not even the alcohol, desiring the alcohol. It's not even getting drunk because these people aren't getting drunk yet. The part of their brain that is the part that screams addiction and abuse and impulsive behaviors is lighting up after they drink the beer, but not so much after they drink the Gatorade. So I thought that's, you know, just a pretty interesting article in general, that there's obviously some things going on here that we can't exactly put our finger on. And interestingly, in addition to the PET scan results, participants reported an increased beer craving after tasting beer without similar craving responses after tasting the sports drink, even though many thought the Gatorade actually tasted better. So, ignoring the fact that the Gatorade, et cetera, there's clearly upregulating some other part of the brain here.
So my question, though, is who are these participants, and are they familiar with beer?
Yeah, so they picked, it was their preferred beer.
Okay, so I don't necessarily buy, so my initial assumption is that if this is a beer that they're familiar with, if it's something that they enjoy, I would think that simply the taste of it is going to cause that, is going to cause something to light up, because the usual aftermath of that is booze, the alcohol, right?
That's the question. Have they associated the two?
That's my gut.
Yeah, that's a tough thing to answer. The other interesting thing, they found a stronger effect in participants with close alcoholic relatives.
Yeah.
So they're saying there might be some inherent, you know, biochemical response in the brain, which is what leads them to become alcohol abusers.
Sure. Or at least makes it more likely.
Or at least makes it more likely. Yeah. Just the taste of it. So then,
cause there's no question. For example, I just want to pause there. Coffee, right? There's no question. And this is completely anecdotal. This is just personal. But when I would drink coffee regularly, and just the smell, like even almost without taking that first sip, just the smell, I would start to wake up. And I don't think that it's anything that's entering my nostrils. I think it's simply what the body expects next. Mm-hmm. I could feel, I know my brain would be lighting up on absolutely. I know my brain would be lighting up on the PET scan at that moment. And then when I take the first sip, I mean, I'm immediately feeling more and more and more awake. So that's my two cents.
It feels so good when it touches your lips.
But it does. Well, we'll get to this later. I've got more on the tea coffee bandwagon.
All right. So taking it a step further, this is from the Science blog, which is an interesting little site here. The title is actually "More Dopamine in Brain's Frontal Cortex, Fewer Spontaneous Makeout Sessions." So I had no clue what this meant, but they're actually referring to a double-blind study, placebo-controlled, in 23 adult research participants. And they gave them a drug, talcapone, and it basically inhibits dopamine degradation. So it basically keeps dopamine. And this isn't a part of the brain, the striatum, where it would stop basically behaviors that would make you to do things not well thought out, make you to act unpredictably, etc. And they basically showed that when they did do this, they took all these tests afterwards, and it decreased their impulsivity, so it made them think things through. And the issue here was back to the alcoholic and the drug use, etc. When you do these drugs, they basically act on the frontal lobe of the frontal cortex of the brain, the striatum, which they say here is saying go, and the frontal cortex is saying stop. So if you take cocaine, you're increasing the go signal, and the stop signal is not adequate to counteract it. And that's the increase in the dopamine. We've discussed how in the mouse study, the sweet taste over cocaine increased dopamine much so more that it was even more addictive than that. So these are all these parts of the brain that are activated. And they also say that scientists believe that impulsivity is associated with an imbalance in dopamine between the frontal cortex, which governs executive functions such as cognitive control and self-regulation, and the striatum, which is thought to be involved in planning and modification of more habitual behavior. So the striatum, it's like the female of your brain in the relationship. There's like the planning and the modification of habitual behaviors. And basically, keeping that area with dopamine in it will stop you from doing stupid things, per se.
Wow.
So it's interesting that, you know, drinking beer, even eating food, can affect that part of your brain to lead you to do further things. So going back to my initial story, so that's fine and dandy if you're trying to avoid carbohydrates, but if you're still stimulating that sweet sensation, you're still sparking that part of your brain that's going to make you think impulsively, and then later on, which is what's happening here, she's still having trouble decreasing her carb. That's why I think we've said it a bunch that you just have to dull that part of your brain and stop doing it. I mean, we were both carb fiends beyond belief. And now, I mean, my family members can't believe that I have no desire to eat those kind of foods because you have to just stop it.
Yep. I completely agree. I think, or don't, and kind of live with the consequences, you know? I think, just know that if you don't stop it, then you may have to deal with some cravings here and there. Yeah. And maybe set some stricter rules around the things you're consuming. You know, it's always, I was talking to one of my clients the other day and I was having an honest conversation with her. And that was like a little mini nutritional consultation kind of thing. She's having a very honest conversation. And I said, you know, first of all, I'm never going to judge anything you do and no one else should either, right? Your choice is your choice. It's just getting clear on what the consequences of those choices are, positive, negative, or both, right? That's my big thing. You get clear on the consequences of your choices, and then you live with, or you either live with the consequences or you change the action pattern. And that's it. It's really, I know I'm making it sound more simple than it may be. There are a lot of emotions that tie in, but that's really what it comes down to. And so I said, you know, you have to figure out what quantity of, you know, quote unquote treats or less than ideal foods or sweets or these kinds of things that you can live with and still have sort of the body and the performance and the feeling that you want on the other side of it, right? It's like this little seesaw that just keeps tipping both ways and you have to kind of play with it. And one of the consequences of continuing to eat sweets is, and to tie it back to your point, the craving. And you have to figure out what you're willing to deal with. And, the only way in my own life, the only way in my life to eliminate the craving is to eliminate all sweets. And it sucks that that's the case. And no, I can't tell you that 100% of every day of my life, I eliminate sweets, but I can tell you for the vast, vast majority I do. And I only have them when it's really, really worth it because I know what happens the next day. You know, like I'm kind of paying the piper the next day, so to speak. And, I can get myself caught in some, you know, couple day, not like, I don't do binges anymore like I used to, but I can get myself caught. Like if I have a treat one night, I will wake up the next day and want something.
Absolutely.
And I'll have to push through that. Then lunch, I'll want it a little bit less, but it'll still be there. Dinner, want it a little bit less, but it'll still be there. And I usually have to get myself 2 or 3 days out before the cravings go.
And those are the good reminders. As you said, there's a lot of emotion with it. When you do it that way, you can separate out the emotion. You get more of a perspective on like, oh, this is what happens when I do this.
Yep.
When you're continually doing it throughout the week, it's really hard to take a step back and see what's happening.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree with that. When you do it regularly, you sort of lose the connection between food and end result and what's actually going on. Yeah, and you really do have to kind of step out of the cycle completely to see it from the other side. Because, you know, for those of you who ever tried going two solid weeks without sweets, I'm pretty sure if you've really done that, I'm pretty sure you can say that third week, your cravings were almost non-existent.
Yeah. The first 2 weeks are very hard.
Yep. But, you know, that third week, again, unless the chocolate chip cookie that you've loved for 27 years is thrust under your nose, like literally in front of your face. But if you're just going about everyday life, I don't think you're experiencing cravings in that third week.
I agree.
So what's the solution, man? I mean, I think everyone handles it their own way. Everyone handles it a little bit differently. I don't think any solution is the right solution, but you've got to live with your solution. Yeah. And so, that's the most important thing. You know, eliminate it and kick the cravings entirely. Or maybe, you know, with every sweet you introduce, maybe set some harder rules around them.
I think everyone has to take a period where they avoid all sweets.
Just to see the other side.
Yeah. Stop. Sure. For X amount of times, I'm not going to do it. You got to do it to stop yourself. It's like quitting, you know, smoking, drinking, drugs. You got to stop.
Yep. And the crazy thing too is, you know, I've been in that cycle. To go back to your story, I've been in that cycle before, you know, years ago, expecting something sweet after dinner.
Yep.
Right. I have many clients, same thing. You expect something sweet after dinner, and it seems silly to consider not having something sweet after dinner. It's so ingrained, right? But I can sit here and tell you now that I'm content without something sweet after dinner. So, I mean, that stuff really can change. And, I just want to say, like, you know, I empathize with those in a situation who are maybe listening to this very podcast and saying something to themselves like, oh, I need my sweet after dinner.
There's nothing wrong with a little dessert. No, there is. Right. There's a lot wrong because it keeps telling my brain to quit, to crave more sweets. At least when it becomes such a rarity that you almost don't enjoy it. It's so out of the ordinary that your brain doesn't say, oh, this is something I need more. Like, there's coffee every day. If I don't do it, my brain's like, why aren't you getting some coffee?
Yep.
If you have sweets once every 2 months, your brain's not going to say, huh, why am I not getting that every other day? Anyway, think about it.
Think about it. Or at least make the transition to, fruit and whipped cream or dark chocolate or something like that. Because, I mean, these are things that are packing much less of a concentrated punch than some of the other things I see going on.
Yep. All right.
So what was the moral? Where do you think she's going from here?
I gave her a recipe that one of my patients gave me that was actually decent.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more of a coconut base, more of like a cream type base. And coconuts, it's a little bit sweet, but it's not like a sugary sweet. Now, even when people are like, oh, honey and these kind of things, I don't know. I still don't see the point in that. Just you're trying to get, and then the worst is the natural sugars. Oh, it's a natural sugar, which I don't know what that means. So anyway, I think, she'll realize that the cravings, they're from more of the sweet, not the sugar. I'll say the sugar won't give you a craving.
Yeah.
So hopefully it'll work out.
We shall see.
All right. We ready to do some takeaways here?
I think so. It's takeaway time. Want to kick us off?
Sure. So workout-wise, just going to present this article. It's from T-Nation. Four Things I've Stolen from CrossFit by Dan Trink. He goes through saying, you know, there's haters out there, and then there's people that love CrossFit and blah, 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 blah. But he says every workout regimen has good parts and bad parts, and there's nothing wrong with taking the good parts of many different workout regimens and applying them to yourself.
Agreed.
And he goes through a bunch of reasons why he likes CrossFit and what are things you can extrapolate from it. And my favorite here is number 3. And this goes right back to you guys at Relentless, especially with the weather getting warm. It says using more gymnastic type movements. And I think he's hit the nail on the head here. He starts it out by saying, one of my clients is a nearly 40-year-old corporate executive and father of two. He recently broke out a handstand in the middle of a dinner party, and everyone in attendance thought he was a superhero. pretty hilarious. But he said, you know, these training programs all these different things. There's gymnastic movements, Olympic lifts, and he says he's added gymnastic movements to his workouts for his clients, which were mostly Olympic lifts, running or sprinting. And he said the results have been great. And you know, it's fun, especially when you're outside. We were just talking about how when I moved to Pittsburgh, my parents are still there and they have a long driveway, so I'm buying a prowler and I just can't wait to get that. He talks about ring pull-ups, farmer's walk, which we've talked about before, ring dip, which, you know, if you can have access to a set of rings, that's great. Not so easy.
We got a set of rings, man.
You guys, I got to come over. But I'll show you the whole article. It makes a lot of good points, but I thought that was good. Even going back to, you know, Daryl, when we're talking about Fitness Explorer and getting outside, these are all things that can make you stronger, better, more fit, perform better, and also just fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you got?
So this kind of ties right in. I mean, we're talking about, you know, strength relative to your own body weight. And I've been, you know, thinking about that a little bit recently with all these outdoor workouts. I mean, inevitably you're going to be pushing, pulling, squatting, moving your own body weight. So with that, I wanted to take a moment to give you a little bit of a different takeaway, and it is a challenge. And I'm going to invite you to take this challenge for yourself. And then, if you want some accountability, submit to us. Via email or whatever your choice, tweet at us or Facebook or whatever, how well you did. So here's the deal. You're going to set a watch for 10 minutes and you're going to complete the following 5 exercises cyclically over and over and over again for as many rounds as you possibly can. They're all relative to your own body weight. So number 1 is the only one that I don't know whether or not you personally have access to. And that is the chin-up or jumping chin-up. If you are very proficient at the chin-up and you have a bar, great. If you're not very proficient, I suggest you use the jumping chin-up, which is where you put a platform under yourself and you propel yourself with a jump give yourself a little momentum to carry your chin up and over the bar. And you can basically put that platform as high as you need to consistently get your chin over the bar. Just in case you can't do full chin-ups, totally fine. If you don't have a chin-up bar, you can always replace it with any sort of a row. So throw in a, you can bring in a resistance band, anything you have on hand that you can row. So 10 chin-ups, jumping chin-ups or rows is going to be your first exercise. 20 bodyweight squats is number two. You're trying to get your thighs down as close to parallel to the ground as possible. 10 push-ups is number three. 20 lunges is number four. And I suggest if you have enough space, just walk it out. So do walking lunges one after the other. 20 total, that would be 10 to each side. And then 10 straight sit-ups, all right? So 10 chin-ups, 20 squats, 10 push-ups, 20 lunges, 10 sit-ups, cyclically over and over until your clock strikes 10. How many rounds can you do? It's a super basic workout. I don't care how fit you are, if you're working hard enough relative to yourself, by that 10th minute, you're going to be breathing hard, and you're going to be feeling good, and you're going to be sweating. And then you're also going to have a sort of milestone marker to improve. So with the idea that here in the Northeast, especially, it is now the spring, I think it'd be a neat thing to challenge everyone not only to do the workout, which is my official challenge, but also to consider testing yourself. How many rounds can you get done in 10 minutes today? And then as we are migrating out of the summer and into the fall, to retest yourself and to see whether you've gotten stronger and quicker relative to your own body weight this season.
Nice. Do it out in the sun.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that you can do out in the sun. If you do out in the sun, the only thing you have to modify, again, you won't be able to do chin-ups, but just get a good handy, well, maybe you'll find a tree or something, but get a good handy-dandy resistance band, string it to a tree, and you can row from there. Or go outside and find a playground. And if you can find a playground, you're probably going to find some monkey bars, and you can do pull-ups or chin-ups from the monkey bars.
Good stuff. I like it.
Cool.
Diet. So I got a confession to make.
Whoa.
I hate liver.
This could go.
I hate liver so badly, and I've been eating it and eating it, and I'm having trouble. I hate it. It makes me gag now. I brought it for lunch today to work. I don't know what to do. So I did have tripe last weekend, and it was extremely spicy.
Okay.
And I liked it a lot. I thought it was awesome.
Wow.
It was chewy, but had a much better taste. Granted, it was very spicy, so maybe it's actually terrible. Maybe if they made liver that way,
the spice just wiped it all out.
Yeah. And it was awesome. So I'm going to roll tripe style now. No more liver for me for a while.
Wow.
What do you think of that?
I think your image just took a hit.
Anyway, I'll let you guys know, but I'm trying to figure out how to find a way to make it as they did. It was damn good.
All right. Interesting. So, I still actually need to, I have 5 pounds of grass-fed liver in the freezer. I have to break some of that out and figure out how to cook it up.
Don't call me.
Although, I mean, we did have a while back liver, bacon, mushrooms, and onions, right?
That's what I always do.
That was pretty good. I don't know.
It was good. There's just something about the texture. It's just getting to me. You know when something starts to bother you?
Have you soaked out the blood?
No, I didn't.
You should try it.
Yeah, that's the problem. I throw it on pretty bloody.
That's a common
mistake.
Well, I mean, if you're sensitive to the taste, you know?
Yeah.
I think Paul Gemine is someone who always talks about getting drastically better flavor if the liver is soaked out.
Try it.
If the blood is soaked out.
My brother did that and then spilt the entire
thing
in his fridge, much to his wife's
dismay. Yeah.
Anyway, what do you got?
All right, nutrition. So mentioned this earlier, tea. I said I would come back to it. I am not only off coffee, I'm off decaf coffee right now. I can't quite tell you why. It's just something, you know, I am always interested in what I consume and how I move my body. And so I'll try silly stuff every now and again. And I just wanted to see removing decaf coffee,
craving plastic,
what would go down, right?
It's good thus far.
So it's good. It's really good so far. And you know, who knows? It's only, it's just under a week into this little experiment. So who knows what to attribute it, who knows what to attribute the positive feeling to, but I can tell you it has not been a bad experience. I went out to Whole Foods and picked myself up a variety of teas, a good green tea, a good midday, like rooibos tea, and then a good nighttime, like a passion flower based tea that's designed for kind of winding you down. And so I think each day I'll have between one and two of them, almost always starting the day with the green now, which is in those pyramid bags. And
green
then
tea makes me nauseated.
I know you're saying that.
Anyway,
I do have it with food though, so yeah. Maybe if I had it on an empty morning stomach, it'd be a little worse. So
right,
I will report back. It's kind of crazy. I am literally the guy who in college was gifted one of those stovetop Italian espresso makers, the kind of the percolator style. And I didn't know my head from my tail when it came to coffee then, but I would make an entire one of them of espresso and just drink it.
Yes, that's a little out of control.
Yeah, a little out of control. But it's just crazy to think back, you know, a decade ago and see how far I've come and how weak I've gotten when it comes to my... Come a long way, or maybe in the opposite direction. I definitely cannot handle caffeine like I used to.
That's a good thing.
Is it?
It is a good thing.
All right. I'll trust you.
All right.
Caveman Corner?
Let's do it. So oftentimes in the show, we talk a lot about knowing yourself, you know, knowing thyself. I think we had a whole podcast titled that. You know, I was just going through these articles with, you know, drug abuse acting on certain parts of the brain, habitual behaviors, inhibition of our planning functions, impulsiveness, etc. It's know yourself again, know your physiology and your biology. Really, a lot of these times, it's not necessarily a matter of discipline. There's not much you can do about it. So know that coming in. You know, obviously, we beat a dead horse with the carbohydrate talk. But it's just like if someone were addicted to cocaine, you would not replace that with something else which gave you the same high but was not cocaine, because you're just going to fall into the same behaviors. And I know it sounds crazy, but it's really not. I mean, I've experienced it. Other people have experienced it. Eating some of these foods can make you lose your – you just turn totally impulsive. I mean, anyone that's eaten a piece of bread and then ate 10 more in the entire basket knows what just happened there. This is a – it stimulates a part of the brain which causes addictive, impulsive type behaviors. And know that it's out of your hands and you're not undisciplined. There's nothing you can do about it. So you got to set up some stops to make sure that it doesn't happen. What do you think about that?
I agree. Couldn't agree more. Yeah, setting rules going in is so huge. That if you are going to, to go back to what we were saying before, if you're going to play with fire, which is fine. I mean, hey, a lot of people play with fire very successfully, but the people I know who play with fire successfully set serious ground rules. And, I know a lot of people are opposed to doing that because they feel like it takes the magic out of life. But if I've personally found nothing else, I think, you know, I first heard this, David Allen from Getting Things Done. He's like the organizational whiz. Mm-hmm. I listened to a presentation that he gave and it was pretty solid. But I took away this, it was a rule system inspires freedom. And I gave that some good thought and I agree with it. I think that, if you put some solid rules around the treats you're messing with, it does give you freedom in that moment. It allows you to relax because you have created a system that works. Whereas if you do the opposite, don't create rules, you may think you're free in the moment, but then wake up the next day and see how you feel about yourself. I don't think that's freedom.
Yeah. All right.
Good stuff.
What do you got? Thanks.
Absolutely. So relentless report, adapt to your circumstances. We talk about this a lot. One thing I talk about this a lot in reference to is my workouts. And I think a little while back I mentioned that it was a particularly stressful time. And so what I had been doing was cutting my workouts back, because it was not smart for me to be going hard at that time. And that proved useful. I could not have handled a heavy workload. So I cut myself back to about 3 half-hour workouts a week. You know, I would still decent intensity in there, but that kind of kept my head above water for a little while. Well, pleased to report that with the breaking of the weather, as we've talked about, I was able to cut back a day in terms of the physical portion of my job. I'm feeling good. And it's funny. What I've noticed is I want to work out. Now all of a sudden I crave the workouts again, which is really interesting. It's my body kind of saying, all right, you know, have a little extra in the gas tank here. Let's get back to some workouts. And so I'm very pleased to report it's early on in the process, but I am optimistic and pleased to report that I've been able to up my workouts last week, started this week with the same mentality, and I'm excited to see what's around the corner.
Yeah, man. I've experienced the same thing. And I was just speaking with my brother who lives in Chicago. He's saying the same thing. I think the weather just cures all.
Yeah.
The sun.
Yeah. So I'm curious to see where it goes, because I know it's the weather for me plus that day, you know, getting that that extra day of at least physical downtime, I think is reinvigorating the body a little bit, which is a cool experience.
Great stuff, man.
Does that do it?
That does it.
Episode 4.0.
Hopefully we motivated some people to get out there, work outside.
Nail that exercise challenge. And
and
report back.
Those addictive foods.
Absolutely.
Episode 40 in the books.
Yeah, you can find this man on cavemandoctor.com. Drop him a comment. You can listen to the episode there. You can also grab it on relentlessroger.com, which is my site. Don't forget, got a free code for you for that book. It's probably going to last. The free code is probably going to last into early May, but no further, because then it'll be out on Amazon. So again, if you go to relentlessroger.com, you can grab it with a free coupon code of I am relentless, all one word, all lowercase. And please send your feedback to me. Let me know what you think. And that is that. And of course, you can catch us on iTunes, drop us a review there. And that is all. That's all I got. I'll shut up now.
All good, man. Everyone have a good week.